Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, listen between and affiliated back to Bending the Elements, an Avatar podcast by us, the Novice Elitist, here continuing on with episode 4 of Netflix's Avatar, The Last Airbender. Caleb, how are you doing at the moment?
Oh, I'm kind of confused. I don't know what happened, but suddenly I'm into the dark. My room, the lights went out. I guess the wind was having some issues, and yeah, now I'm just sitting in the dark here, talking to you.
Are you referring to what happened Saturday? Because I actually had some power outages on Saturday happened to me, so I don't know.
I did too. Yeah, it was the wind. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it also was you. Okay, I was wondering because I asked a buddy of mine, and he lives right around you, and he was saying like, oh yeah, the lights were flickering.
Yeah, flickering.
How did you not lose any light? But anyway.
Yeah, they didn't fully go, but they were definitely flickering a lot, and I was like, oh no, what's going to happen here?
Well, what can I say? But we have a bunch of opposing elemental forces coming at each other right now during this time of spring. And so, of course, you know, when they collide and or interact with each other, there's a negative reaction in the way of strong winds, if you could say. And the strong winds were probably where they felt this episode. Who knows? Let's get to the discussion and find out.
Yeah. Into the dark. This one. Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one quite yet. But I guess I should just start with our usual spiel of saying that this was written by someone named Keeley MacDonald. Don't recognize the name. Doesn't really look like she's done very much. But it was also directed by the same guy who did the previous episode on Mashu, Jabbar Rossini. But yeah, we're picking up pretty much right where we left off last time. We're still in the city of Mashu. The Aang is going off to visit the king now. He's been called to the palace. And over with Sokka and Katara. After talking to the mechanist and trying to get him to, you know, change his ways, what was the reason that they head off to the Cave of Two Lovers again?
They wish to rescue Aang?
Oh, yes. Okay, there you go. Yeah, I don't know. I watched both these episodes today, and for whatever reason, this first one's becoming a little bit of a blur in my memory. So you might have to leave this one for me today.
That's fair. Once again, it kind of is a mashing of many different episodes from the series, as, of course, adaptation will up front. You know, I got some positives, obviously, about this episode. I got some negatives, I guess, and obviously feelings in between, maybe unaffiliated. But at least the positive is more interactions between General Iroh and Aang.
Yes, that was the best stuff, I think, in this episode for me, at least, the two of them in the prison there.
That's right. I got to quickly remind myself. I have to remember that previously, I forgot to mention this. Again, it's nothing minor. It's very minor, but I just realized with the introduction of Azula last episode, I just realized, remember in book 2, episode 1 of the animated series, I can't believe I still have to say that.
The Avatar State?
Yep. Of the Avatar State, yep. When she first... see Zuko when she first shows up to that place that salon or not the salon, sorry, the spa, that's what it is, when they're at the spa there, she mentions spies and or at least like rabble rousers or people who are going to go against Ozai, and that's kind of what happens in that previous episode. So I'm like, oh, they actually like showed us that stuff. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I guess that is kind of cool. I didn't really think about the fact that they're kind of layering book 2 and book 1, layering in some bits from the two of them together, which we'll see.
Well, I can guarantee you they're probably going to do that with book 2 and 3, where the layers are almost intersecting and we don't know what's book 2 and what's book 3.
Yes, and I guess just since you said that, I should mention, because we've discussed previously, or more you postulated, is that the word?
postumated. I've actually probably butchered that word plenty of times.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say you put forward that this series, you know, it could be canceled. We could, you know, just get this first season and that be it.
Okay. Okay. Hang on a second.
I don't know if you said it with hope or.
I just said, like any show out there, only looking at Netflix's track record, especially with Cowboy Bebop, I'm only going off of there's a possibility if this doesn't get the views that it needs, like One Piece did, because that's getting a sequel, or that sequel, that's continuing on, hopefully. If the numbers aren't what Netflix sees, they'll just canceled the new Fox, I tell you. I'm just kidding.
Well, it was last week, the first week of March, that Netflix did come out and say that not only have they renewed it for a second season, but they've also renewed it for a third season. So at this point, it seems like we'll definitely get book 2 and 3 for this.
And postulating on this episode, or constipating this episode, whoops.
Oops.
Instead, yeah, we get some other things where another positive, excuse me, I have to say about this that I liked was the backstory, or at least the flashbacks to when Uncle Iroh, not immediately, but during the funeral for his lieutenant, his son.
Oh, jumping right to that, yeah. Now, that was another really great part. I like the interactions, too, with that the guard who was there during the siege, and he's clearly got some history and some hate towards Iroh, and he just keeps pushing at him, and yeah, at one point he's like, oh, I see. You really have no humanity at all. Like, you couldn't even begin to understand what it means to lose someone. And again, Iroh keeps that kind of internal quality, and then we see, yeah, that funeral. That was a really touching moment.
And it was during those scenes where I say accepted, but I definitely saw the actor playing Zuko, and I was like, okay, I'm this guy. I feel for this guy now. Like, he is definitely playing good. Like, you could see the honor, and you can see at least, you know, the portrayal, the good portrayal he does with Zuko. And so I'm like, all right, you won me over.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That was a really strong scene. I like that whole bit with the amulet or the necklace that Luten gave him.
Yep.
That he's giving to Iroh. It's like, oh, you know, he gave me this to tell me that. Oh, what was it again? Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's also fading from memory, but I believe it had to do with Luten. I got it from when he was in the service for like an honor of some sort. Forgive me, I don't remember fully, but he gave it to Zuko. And because of that, you know, Zuko was moved. And so now he feels as though Uncle is the person who needs it the most.
Yeah, sorry, everyone. I had a very long work day today. And yeah, watching these two right afterwards, I was pretty drained. But
perfectly fine. Another positive, I must say. Maybe I'm just, pardon me if I'm just going everywhere and just trying to get all the positive. Unless you want to talk about, unless you want to bring up a positive, I don't want to like just, you know, have me just keep saying positive.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
This is very minor, but when they are taking him, I don't know where, when the Earthbenders are taking him to the pit or whatever it's called, to leave a trail of breadcrumbs for Zuko to follow him, which I'm surprised he did that, actually, because I thought, it's interesting that Uncle Iroh just did that, even though he believed that Zuko was already at the ship. Maybe I'm a little bit iffy on that one. Not a negative, just like, why was that there if he knew that Zuko wasn't coming back? Unless he did secretly know he was. I don't know. Who knows? I did like the part where he dropped the lotus tile instead of his shoe. Like, maybe that makes a little bit more sense. And you're just like, yeah, no, I guess that makes more sense than the shoe.
Hey, maybe it was a sign for a certain order of Paisho players. Maybe it was for them.
Mm-hmm. There's that too. You never know. I mean, I don't know if they exist in here. Let's see what other positives is there.
I quite liked the little last moment where we see Zuko as he's getting ready to set off, and he's still, you know, it's relatively recent after he's been banished, and he's got that wrap around his head for where he's been burned.
Oh yes.
And Iroh comes, and they have a really nice little speech there, and Zuko's kind of like, oh, like, I don't need a babysitter. And Iroh says, how about a friend? And I really liked the moment where Zuko's like, it'll be a long time till you see home again. And Iroh's like, oh, you know, everything that I need is here on this ship. And then just to like play it off, he's like, oh, my tea, of course, is what I mean. And he laughs. I thought that was a very Iroh moment of kind of couching a really emotional moment between the two of them with a little bit of humor. So I thought they handled that really well.
Well, I think we should at least get the elf in the room now out of the way. Not so much negative. Also, I agree with you completely. Like, that was very well done. I was surprised by it. It added more to what was already existing.
Yeah.
And I guess giving it, you know, I guess more to it. Let's talk about the Earth King. I don't know where that is for you. I think I'm leaning more like neutral potentially, but let's talk about it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess just to lay the cards on the table too, I'm leaning more negative, but not necessarily like I hated it or I thought the actor was just terrible. I thought the makeup was fairly weak. But really what I kept noticing throughout the episode is every time we cut back to Aang, I'm least interested in this part of the plot. Let's get back to Iroh, or let's get back to the Cave of Two Lovers. Like, I don't really care about this side of the plot. And it wasn't until the end that I kind of realized, I was like, oh man, that seems like that's telling for how much I was not enjoying that side of it. I think the performance of the guy playing the Earth King, I don't know, it doesn't feel lovable. It feels like a young man trying to pretend to be an old man. And it just, I don't know, it has this weird, like, phony quality to it. How about you?
I guess they were, again, trying to think of adapting more of the episode. It would seem that I at least like what they were trying to do with Bumi, where he is conflicted, where he has that at the, you know, when him and Aang fight, there's I kind of like that the 100 years has jaded him and he is kind of, yeah, I guess has some apprehensions over that. It makes me wonder if Kuzan's still alive. I at least want a reference to Kuzan, hopefully, especially from that book. But with Bumi, though, him like either see there was a lot more optimism in the show.
Yeah,
the original series. This one, don't worry, they're not trying to make it gritty or anything like that. I mean, one can believe that if they wish to, but I don't think it's full on like Zack Snyder gritty. But I like the angle they're going at with him. I don't know if it was direction or the actor or anything like that. Nothing on the actor. Maybe they were miscast. I have no idea. But I do like that both Aang and Bumi should be taking something out of the other. Where he does bring up, like, there is some bitterness and or at least some apprehensions over the fact that Aang was gone for 100 years. I guess maybe potentially we could have used more scenes between the two of them. As young kids, excuse me. We only, like, you know, got the, that he was the one that gave, I think it was him, yeah, who gave Aang the bison whistle.
Yeah.
Interesting. I thought that would just be given to him by the monks, but turns out I was wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess with them making it more of like a piece of rock, it would make sense that an earthbender would form that form. And I thought that the stuff with them as kids was cute. I liked the chemistry between them and I could feel a little bit of the translation with the older one, but yeah, I don't know. I think it was mainly just performance, like all the stuff with the little games and the Earth King trying to teach him lessons. That stuff I thought was okay, but I think just the performance I just found so off-putting. And again, I don't know if it's fully the actor or if it's partially the awkward makeup of this, and it creates that illusion of a young man playing an old man. But then at the same time, I could never tell if the Earth King was doing a thing where he was being like Yoda, where he's pretending to be more senile and out of it than he really is, or if he really is that way and he's just having like moments of more clarity going in between moments of just being kooky. I wasn't quite sure about that either.
Would you say he was acting like he was acting as if he was out of an animated film or an animated show?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, I guess you could almost say it's a not direct translation, but he has the voice down.
Yeah, that's true. That feels decent. Yeah.
So I guess just for the ending for Bumi, I guess I like the angle they went at with, maybe it is, you can say, contrived or forced, not earned, where he is not vengeful, but definitely there's some bitterness between Aang leaving him, you know, for 100 years. I could definitely see that, and see, you know, how the war has changed him. I kind of liked at least what they were on paper. I like that. And at least with Aang, with that test where it's like, you know, what do you, the classic, like, do you save one doctor or five doctors?
Yep.
I thought in that instance, that was when, as contrived as it might sound, I actually thought that's where Aang would use the Avatar state. I know he
I thought so too.
Can't, obviously. That was where I was like, oh, this is perfect. Where, in fact, I actually thought they were molding stuff from the Avatar state episode originally. So, as I just mentioned, you know,
yeah.
Season or book two, episode one of the original series with the general, the crazed general. I thought they were actually combining both those together so that Aang would have to make that like hard choice. But the fact that he has the Avatar state means that he can just avoid that altogether.
Yeah, I think that maybe would have been a better choice because, you know, when it just comes down to, oh, I can do it with my friends, you know, being here, it's all about us leaning on each other. I don't know. I don't know if it quite worked. Like I was shocked that Aang in general could hold those two rocks, those two giant boulders. Maybe I'm being unfair to it.
Yeah, probably. At least for now, him being able to hold up two rocks with air. It'll be interesting to see what he'll be able to do with earthbending.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a little bit too. I was wondering if he was going to be able to pull out some earthbending in this episode, but
I was like actually expecting Toph to show up at one point. We'll get to it, of course, more in depth, but when the Rotund showed up, I was like, yo, it was okay, like Toph gonna just be with like this Rotund, that'd be kind of like dope. Like if they just immediately have her in book one, that'd be interesting, but less on that. Yeah, so I was a little bit disappointed in the end there, but not like in a negative sense. So I'm a little bit mixed with Boomy. That's where I guess we're in the mixed, at least for me, I'm in the mixed section of this where it's like, oh, there's stuff there that I like and there's stuff there that I didn't like. So overall, I'm mixed on Boomy's side of the plot. I guess at the end, of course, I am positive that he decides to finally engage the enemy, I suppose.
Yeah,
let them bring them. And of course, the mechanist redeems himself. They're very minor. So it's not really positive. I guess positively, like the mechanist redeems himself and Teo. Well, Teo did nothing at all. So nothing at all. Sorry, he didn't do like anything wrong in this case. So but they were definitely pushed into the background. I was expecting them to be way more present in this than I thought. I thought Teo was going to come with Katara and Sokka to rescue Aang somehow, but we didn't get that, so nothing on those two. But I was actually surprised from the last episode how less involved all the players of that last piece were not involved in this.
Oh, with like, yeah, Jed and his gang. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was very impressed that we didn't see more of that here. I was like, wow, fair enough. All right, any like mixed and or other neutral thoughts you have on any of the pieces in this episode? Before we get to negatives, because I don't want to just immediately go to like positive, mixed, negative. Just
yeah,
it's what we're doing here, I guess. Now,
yeah, I was gonna say I one of the things I did like that related to Boomy, because near the end he starts going on about like, oh, you know, when you're a leader in this kind of situation, you have to learn how to, you know, kind of what's the word, like almost like triage, figure out what things need to be your immediate attention, which things can be left, you know, who gets food, who needs the food the most, who can stand to starve for a little bit. I like how they utilized that guard with Iroh to fill in the backstory with the city, where he talks about during the siege, you know, the soldiers got to eat, but people like his brother who were just citizens, they had to be out there starving and waiting to see when things will turn around. So we could see the darker picture that we're only getting in kind of hints with Boomy. We can see represented right in that soldier's experience. So I like that.
I did not make that connection. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I appreciate that even more now.
Yeah. I'm not sure what about the Boomy thing. Maybe, I don't know if it was just as superficial as me not liking the old age makeup or why that didn't fully work for me, but I don't know. Maybe I just, maybe on a second viewing, maybe I'd like some of this stuff more.
The bit, I guess, that in the background having the statues of Flopsy was, I appreciate that at least. We didn't have Flopsy himself, but instead, you know, just statues. I'll tip the hat to that one. It's like, all right.
Yeah, I kind of like that too.
I don't expect everything. Relax. I'm just like, fair enough.
More stuff that I like.
Or mixed with. I don't really
or care sure either. Oh, I we forgot to mention during that funeral scene, What did you think of them in the background of the music, putting in the leaves from the vine notes when Zuko sits with him and we kind of zoom in and see how much it affects Iroh with his tears coming in?
Oh, like winter, spring, summer, and fall? The four seasons, or?
No, the leaves from the vine song from Tales of Ba Sing Se. You start to hear just a little twinkles of it as he's sitting there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Whoops.
Yeah, it struck me, and I started thinking about that moment in Tales of Ba Sing Se and the dedication to Mako, and I started to well up a little bit. I don't know if it was fully from this episode itself.
Oh, yeah.
But just that inference to that episode, it made me really think about that.
Well, good thing they set that up here. Start that here. That's good ear. I didn't hear that. That's I was doing dishes when I was watching that part.
That's fair.
That part came up, but oops.
We got busy lives these days, the two of us.
Doing dishes. Oh no. perish the thought. That's interesting. The scene this is not mixed. This is positive, obviously. I like that we actually have like a original series never did this, but an actual interaction between Ozai and Iroh was very appreciative.
Oh yeah, no, I quite like that too. Yeah, you could feel a sort of because during that funeral scene, you see people being like, "Oh wow, like how disgraceful! Like his son will die a hero, and he'll die with all of us always remembering him as a failure." And then Ozai comes in and gives kind of the standard, like, oh, like your son will always be remembered for a hero kind of thing. But the tone of it, I don't know if it's just me filling in, but I can feel a subtle kind of like it's almost just there out of doing your duty. It's not like he actually cares about his brother at all.
Like there's a passive aggressiveness to his words.
Yeah. And I liked what they did with Zuko there too. Another good use of writing and performance where Zuko comes over and he does a similar thing where it's just like, he's saying what he needs to say, then he starts to walk away, and then you just see him stop and think. And it's like, no, this is someone I really care about, and this is a moment where he would really use someone being personal with him, not just doing the expected kind of duty. And he goes back and tells that personal story about his son. Because all the other people are just kind of like, oh, we honor him as a hero of the Fire Nation, almost dehumanizing him in that way as a real person. So I like that bit too.
I like the bit as well. I said it was mixed, but now this is positive. Again, when Zuko finds the Lotus Tile, did you notice how it was? He was in what you could believe to be a crossroads, a fork in the road.
No, I didn't notice that. That's fun.
Nah, and just that's just me projecting. That's just me trying to like fit a circle into a square hole.
That's fair. Why not?
It's not working at all. Yeah, the whole bit of him saving his uncle, by the way, like just like in episode 7 of Last Airbender, that was I did enjoy that part as well. All right, I don't want to jump ship or anything like that because we can come back to other stuff later, but let's just get to the negatives. Why not?
Yeah, you started off. I'm curious what your negatives are going to be.
Obviously, just for this episode, I hope he comes back, but just the way Katara and Jet, that whole thing happened, not feeling it. It was very standard. What can I say? They went to, I guess maybe it's what it called for, but it's very just standard. Like you betrayed me or something like that. If you're not for it, actually. See, I don't find the acting. Okay. I'm not saying it's bad. I don't find it when, you know, Hayden Christensen as Anakin in episode 3, when he says all that stuff, it does sound probably corny and bad. But I don't see it that way. This literally made me think of like everybody's reaction to Hayden Christensen as Anakin in episode 3, where nothing on the actor, but just the way I guess he delivered it or how the lines were definitely made me feel like, okay, that probably could use another take.
Yeah, I'll say the Jet stuff for me here also, it didn't work. And it was partially on him, partially the writing. But again, I don't understand why this, the actress playing Katara, I can't remember how to say her name at the moment. And I don't want to mispronounce it, so I won't say it.
But yeah, we really don't.
I knew how to say it at one point.
When she was in Beans, or Bean, excuse me.
Yeah, or Anne with an E. I really liked her character a lot on that program. I thought she was really good in both Bean and that. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure what the reason is here. I found her deliveries during that situation with Jet just a little bit awkward, and I don't know, it felt like she was just reading a script. And Jet doing his whole, like, oh, you know, all this power that you feel now, that's because of me. And she's like, what? No, that's because of me. I was like, is this, where is this delusions coming from for this guy? He thinks that somehow he's given her her key to power.
Her motivation, basically. He's like, I'm the one that made you. It's like, okay, here's the thing. If they want to go this route with, like, this, you know, this disagreement and this obvious, like, I hate you or something like that. They are nothing like me or, sorry. If they want to go with that direction, fair enough. It's a little bit, yeah, forced and cliched right now. But if they wanted to genuinely do that, they would have, sorry, not trying to rewrite here, but I think it probably would have been smart to have Jet not reveal his true colors until, like, midway through the season. Not even midway, but just, like, don't have him reveal immediately that he's, you know, this extremist, or, you know, he's willing to put Earth Kingdom people lives at risk.
Yeah, if they could have just bled it out a little bit more, I feel like they could have had a more interesting story there instead of just, yeah, unloading it on the first episode that we see him in. And of course, they did that in the animated show as well, but I feel like they're going for a slightly different dynamic here. So,
again, I'm hoping, like, I really hope that, you know, Jet becomes this recurring character and not just what he was as just a one-off character in the, you know, Prime show.
Yeah.
I say Prime show, but the original show, excuse me.
Yeah, and so, no, definitely the Jet scene here was in the negatives. It was not a highlight. For either party, for her or for him. And yeah, I'll be happy to not to take a little break from the Jet character for a season, I'm sure.
I'm still like extending the hand out to, like, all right, just, you know, maybe course correct or something like that. Have him come back and be like, oh, I see the error of my ways or something like that. Again, it's so weird me saying it. I'm just like, come on, let's, or maybe he'll be locked with Zuko, I don't know, early on.
Oh, no.
That would be interesting, though. That would be interesting because Zuko is going to have a coup on his hands soon when he gets back to the ship. Because Zhao is being Zhao. So we'll see how that goes. But, like, you never know. The Freedom Fighters might, like, well, but the thing is, would he believe Zuko to be the... Well, we'll see. We'll see. Sorry, I'm just speculating at this point. Oh, so what'd you think of the Rotund?
Because
in principle, it's not the fact that, you know, it's animated the way it is. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. They also say, like, oh, you know, they taught the first earthbenders, but it really does look like they're just really big and bulky and they can just smash through walls. It doesn't look like they're actually bending the material. It just looks like they're just, yeah, breaking through it.
Yeah, the way, like, you know, go back and look at the Rotunds and, you know, they were... You know, I just love the fact that they were as much of a gag as it was. I just, even though we're trying to be serious about them, I just love how they were also Zambonis.
Yeah, pretty much.
At the same time in the Earth Rumble 6, just like, all right, clear all the rocker out of here. Let's get out of here. I don't know why that's still, this is just funny to me, but it's my love for Zambonis. What can I say? But like, no, but you see, you know, like, yeah, they were proud, magnificent, round creatures.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you could see, you know, their movements. You could see why people with energies within them would kind of look at them and say, oh, they're doing something there. And why a certain blind girl was able to kind of feel the motions that they were doing and be like, hey, this is kind of cool. And slowly started to learn earthbending.
Yeah, and these badger moles, truth be told, they're not like some of the other ones. It's kind of like, oh, like, I don't know, they look kind of ugly or something like that. These ones look okay, but I still think they're a little bit scary. They look like big monsters, especially when they, like, yell right in the screen. I was like, I don't know if we needed that.
But, yeah, again, if you could get Oja levels of cuteness from them, that'd be great. Because, again, I keep saying they're just absolute fluffy Rotunds in the original series.
Yeah, they're cute as all heck. Yeah.
Rivaling Appa, for pit's sakes, which is, that's the point.
Yeah, but how'd you feel about them blending in the, it did make me wonder if we're going to see Omashu in the second season with them doing the Cave of Two Lovers here and also doing the little group of hippie guys that we saw as well. minstrels or whatever.
I'll say I didn't really care much. Yeah, I didn't care much for it. I kind of just like rolled my eyes, or at least I saw that doing the dishes. I was like, yeah, okay, fair enough. I guess we're going with this. It means that I guess it means that they have different plans for if we do the occupation of Omashu with May's dad being the governor. We'll see. I'm not sure, because again, with introducing them so early on, like, I mean, the Azula attack squad as well, it means that things will be different. So
yeah,
I presume that if we do return to Omashu, chances are maybe not, but I'd hope so, because we leave it off with saying, you know, Boom's gonna fight back finally. So it's like, you know, Aang inspiring hope there, I suppose. But it's like, here's hoping, knock on wood to that. But with the at least tale of Ba Sing Se, sure, I prefer the original, but I will say upon rewatch or at least rewatching it, you know, throughout us talking about it, I was at least getting flashbacks to Genndy Tartakovsky's micro series of Clone Wars, Volume 2, where Anakin is in that cave and he experiences a flashback of those Nivalians, and the tale of the man with the cursed arm. It's not the same art style, but I was getting flashbacks to that. And I love that. So in the same way, I won't say I love this, I appreciated it, And as for the hippies, I was like, okay. I mean, I was rolling my eyes. I'll at least say I was probably a little bit more mixed than negative.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they were doing their best what they could with it. And I was like, I'll give it that to them, you know? And yeah, seeing the little tapestry display of the Cave of Two Lovers, I thought that was quite well done. I liked that. It definitely changes the dynamic having Sokka and Katara going through the Cave of Two Lovers.
All right, I'm just going to rip my shirt just because it's like there's no denying it. It's like they... Okay, so can I just say that the end when they do discover the Badger Mole, and like, I don't remember. Do you remember the speech that she exactly gives? I don't know all the words, but the way she delivers it, and or at least the way the actor gives it. Okay, hear me out. Hear me out. Okay, this is nothing on Kelly Marie Tran or anything like that.
Oh,
but I was getting flashbacks to Episode 8 when she saves Finn. And it's like, I'm not fighting. I don't remember. You know the line, though, that I'm referring to. I'm not fighting to kill people or whatever. I'm fighting to save the ones we love.
We're not fighting what we hate. We're saving who we love or something like that.
Again, she delivered it fine in that movie. It's just maybe the dialogue and the direction, potentially. I don't know. I'm not blaming it all on Johnson, but still, he went that direction. It's like.
And it was like they played it as like, this is such a profound moment. This is the point of the film, this line.
Never seen this before in Star Wars ever.
Yeah, it just felt so flat.
Uh-huh. That more on that in our other channel eventually on that one. Don't worry. But yeah, I was kind of get like, the actor's performance on that part of when she said the line, in this one where it was sounding similar to me. I was like, can we get a redo of that line, please? Or reread the line?
Yeah, and again, I don't want to pick on her. She's a young actress. And again, I have seen her be really great, especially in Anne with an E.
I believe you. Don't worry. I believe you.
I'm not quite sure what was going on with her performances throughout this series so far. A lot of it does have this strange kind of... Maybe she just found it difficult to work in a fantasy setting, but or dealing with all this CGI, because none of the stuff that I've seen her work with previously had a lot of CGI elements, but yeah, there's something phony that going on there.
Well, that's I
hate to say.
Okay, I'll get to that in maybe the end bit there, but can I also say the fight scene actually between I don't know about like Aang and Bumi, but the fight scene with Zuko and the Earth Kingdom soldiers or the Omashu soldiers, I was a little bit more convinced with. I felt there was, I think they got a little bit better with the, I say better, maybe more realized, or at least I'm more comfortable with, like, you know, the way the fight scenes are going to be in the series. So the way they did that, I was a little bit more impressed. I was like, okay, this isn't bad. And the way Iroh was, sorry for changing subjects so much, like so quickly, but like, and the way Iroh actually interacted and used, how he got serious and he kind of went a little bit Ghost Rider on them. I was like, okay, you know, I can see, you know, what's going on here. I kind of like it.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think anything with Zuko and Iroh in this episode is something that I liked. And I'll honestly say, I think the Cave of Two Lovers stuff was okay. That moment there, the particular deliveries of the lines there, I thought was awkward. But changing the dynamic to be, you know, oh, we're siblings who maybe we've had some pent up issues that we're going to kind of go through this cave and you know, rediscover our shared path and our emotions towards each other. And it's not about romantic love. It's about that kind of sibling love.
Familial love, which is, that's good to bring that up, which I guess Frozen did 11 years ago.
Yeah, and again, it is weird to put that on the Cave of Two Lovers plot, especially with the story of the two lovers. It's not a natural fit, but I think that they do enough with it that I can be like, okay, if that's the representation of this, we're going to get in this. It's passable enough. It's just, yeah, maybe the final moment when she's like, oh, they respond to emotions like anger and fear, but mostly love. I was like, oh no, this feels like, yeah, let's get another take going on there, guys.
You know, I wonder if that was also bits brought in from, I guess it was, they transplanted the divide, the Great Divide, into the Cave of Two Lovers. Okay.
Nah.
All right. Yeah.
We'll get to the Great Divide in the next episode.
Oh, I haven't seen it, so I have no idea.
Somewhat a joke. It's not, I'm not really being serious.
But. Okay. We'll divide our attention over to that one later on. But sorry, when I try to at least get to, and even though I changed the subject,
oh sure,
I will at least, I guess, to save for the Cave of Two Lovers. I guess I'm a little bit mixed on it. There were some good things in there. There wasn't any great, like, the at least them hashing out their pent up frustrations with each other as siblings. I'll say, like, okay, no, I can appreciate that at least.
Yeah.
That was okay. That gets a pass for me. But what I was going to was the, and why I jumped off to the fight scene with Zuko and Iroh against the Omashu soldiers was, again, this isn't on them. Not even on Katara being like maybe OP at least. I don't really know. That I don't really care too much about right now. But it is just the use of water effects. I'm still not convinced. I am.
Yeah.
Let me, like, put me in front of a computer for pit's sakes and try to animate this stuff. Like, obviously, yes. Fair enough.
Just throw you in.
I don't have any right to, you know, say otherwise. I don't even think it's the effects itself, per se, but the just, okay, she splashes water on him. He gets stunned, I guess. Freezes him, that's fine. That's nothing. That's kind of, you know, no to the original episode. That's fine. That's not it. But just the idea of this being, you know, offensive against fire and earth, I'm like, you're going to have to do a little bit more to convince me, because I'm not really convinced.
Yeah, they had a way of making it seem like you can use the water as like a blunt object to impact someone. The blast of it wouldn't just break up. It would hit you, you know. Here, it just like, it splashes on you. It's just not, it's not seem threatening.
So the shock of being soaked and covered in water, and I guess my internal body heat reacting to, you know, cold water, yes, that'll get a shock out of me. There's got to be more than just that. Again, this is not so much on the artists. This is just, I guess, on the principles of the choreography, I guess, with the water. And I'm like, again, the water whip is, I guess, just a good demonstration of, like, yeah, you have all this force. I mean, I guess, again, it's the same thing with, like, earthbending, where there's this just, like, tremendous, like, solid force. It's the, how do you, unless they're, I don't know, if they're, unless they're trying to, like, find a way to use the liquid to their advantage, which is fair. I can't, or that's another thing they could be doing is, what if Katara is not just using water, but also using, like, you know, liquids, like blasting jelly, for instance.
Well, we'll see if they get into other liquids as we go along.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like napalm or something like that. They don't have napalm in this world, but even still. Okay, where else would you like to go, sir?
I guess just a little bit earlier on in the episode when we still get Arawen and Aang in the jail cell. And we get, let's see a little bit of Iroh showing some respect for the Earthbenders and the way that they construct their buildings. I like that we get a sense of the fact that, you know, Iroh, he's a man of culture. Even though he's a firebender, he still can look at and respect the qualities of different nations. I like that they're representing that here. And I also like the kind of easy communication that Aang and Iroh have. Like, they speak to each other, not as enemies, right away. I think that they showed that in the first episode, and they continue that here. And I like that.
Again, the interactions between Aang and Iroh, I want more of, and I appreciated, you know, the two of them, and him questioning, and I hope to get more of an answer, well, not, I say more of an answer, but I hope that there are more answers given to Aang regarding Zuko's plight.
Yeah.
Even this early on, I wouldn't mind, just because he is so fascinated, but he's also kind of perturbed and, yeah, annoyed that it was like, why are you after me? I kind of like that. That does seem natural. Just like, why the heck are you hunting me? Like, for aside from the obvious.
You know, even liked Aang, because he can see that he could potentially have an ally here with Iroh. He's like, can't you talk to this Zuko guy and like get him to find a better way to find what he's looking for? But they don't really get to explore too much because, yeah, then they're immediately separated and they go off in their different directions. But that little hint of the dynamic between them, I'd like to see that further explored.
Agreed. One other cool, like, nod. It's hopefully not so, like, Han Solo gets his gun or whatever from Solo. but I guess just, like, you know, just as a, I guess, just a quick, you know, like, acquisition by Katara, her getting her leather water pouch, excuse me. Either from the Mechanist or somewhere, I don't know exactly. Yeah, I like that bit.
Yeah, no, I like that too. And I guess I like too that they throw in there, I think it's in this episode that the Mechanist says that he's working with the Earth King's army to root out a Fire Nation, I don't know what the word would be, like infiltrators.
Spies,
thank you, yeah.
That's at the very end there with, where he kind of redeems himself. I wish he was present for that. It makes me wonder if we'll see him again at all. They don't leave anything to do with, like, so yeah, there's nothing involved with, because you know, his biggest contribution is he invents the war balloon. So if we don't get that, that will be interesting and change the dynamic of the ending, unless they already have that power.
That's fair. Yeah, I guess we haven't really seen any of the technological elements yet, except for just their warships. But
well, that was the thing, because tanks didn't show up until the Northern Air Temple in book 1 episode 17, I believe, where that's the whole reason for him, of course.
Oh yeah, I guess if I'm just thinking of things that I liked in this episode again, just as a little minor thing that I thought was kind of a nice touch just in terms of production design, I like that in the Earthbender prison they have these, instead of like torches on the walls, they have these glowy bioluminescent rocks or crystals. I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, okay, that's, I don't know if they were doing that as like a firebender prevention, even though it doesn't make sense in this because they need to utilize the element of fire. They can't like create it themselves, but it didn't really, was it the M. Night movie when they needed to, or were the firebenders in everything? They could just create their own element of it.
So in, I think, the original series, it was also those green bioluminescent crystals, because we see that also in Ba Sing Se, because they also have a lot of like those green crystals to.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Again, replace firebending, as if, you know, we don't want to have the element of fire present with us or else, like, we're doomed to like expose ourselves from fire. And I assume that even in the original series, we didn't really get that with this, but, or in the, yeah, we didn't really get that in the original series, but I assume that what the Shyamalan movie did can also be accomplished by regular firebenders who can create their own fire. So they just don't need to, cause they already have it. But
So it wasn't the Shyamalan movie where they would have to use fire, like the element around them, they couldn't create themselves. I don't know why I have that in my head.
Sorry, yeah.
Oh, it is in that. Okay.
Yeah, it is, because remember the big change that he makes is that Sozin's Comet is going to give every firebender the ability to create their own fire, because I suppose Shyamalan thought that they would be too powerful with their own fire. So he, I guess, broke it down back to they can manipulate pre-existing fire. So they have to start the fires in order to advance, which changes the whole aspect of the show, but actually really, or not just show, but like really would paint the whole siege of taking over the world or, yeah, expanding themselves out very differently, I think, than it would in the show.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Cause if they don't have, cause well, not just that, but like if they don't have that much fire to them, goodness gracious me, I don't know if they'd be able to conquer all their territories. I feel like it would be more like a stalemate than it would be domination.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank goodness you're here, because for a minute there, I thought I was just talking nonsense. I was like, no, I don't think that was there. I think I'm just making things up at this point, but thankfully you're there to remind me.
It was an aspect that they didn't do. Like, it was an aspect that people hated, obviously. I was okay with it, because, I mean, it's just, that's just how it was. Okay, fair enough. Like, all the other elements can't be created by the other benders, so fair enough. It seems fair play.
Yeah, it does seem like a strange advantage that the Firebenders have in this, in the regular series. But yeah, so I just appreciate that little bit of production design. But I don't think I really have anything more. Yeah, I think that's the end of my notes.
I guess just getting to it now, this is just like random. It shouldn't be in here. It should be maybe on our main channel, but yeah, I'm getting more jaded, I guess, when it comes to... Well, here, if you don't mind this discussion right now, maybe it shouldn't be placed in this category, or at least in this episode.
Sure.
But I was really thinking to myself, what is it that made Lord of the Rings work? What the flip did they do? Like, what unholy magic did Jackson do to, like, make me believe all that stuff existed? And how come we've been chasing that for the past 20 years? And there's probably instances and examples that I just don't know about, but where that has succeeded. But like, what is it about where I just don't believe the stuff I'm seeing on screen?
Yeah, I know.
As in, basically, because the film, I kind of believed more. I don't know. Maybe it was just that era. But this, Once Upon a Time... And now even, I mean, maybe I should give it still a chance, but even, what is that series called? The Amazon series?
Wheel of Time.
Thank you. I just don't believe that I don't see the illusion. I can't suspend my disbelief. I just see actors cosplaying almost, as you said. And it goes back to this of like, do you think that some of the costume designers are like cosplayers potentially?
I don't know what the illusion is. I don't know if it was just that Lord of the Rings came out at the right moment between the crossroads of practical effects and CGI effects. And so the balance wasn't overdone. Because even Peter Jackson himself, he couldn't repeat the trick when it came to The Hobbit. Those have such a fake quality to them. Worse so than this. It's got like this over-stylized kind of quality where you just really can't believe that the world exists. And yeah, I'm not sure why they struggle with that so much going forward to recreate that, the magician's trick.
And again, it is not like, you know, these actors are bad or anything. It is not that. It's been, even over in Wheel of Time or anything like that. I'm just trying to like grasp and think like, what is it? Yeah. What is it that magician's trick, as you said? Why am I not convinced? Because I want to be. It's not like I want, like, is it because I believe in my heart of hearts that you can do, that fantasy is only ever achieved fully in animation? But that's where Lord of the Rings, or Jackson's Lord of the Rings, is the outlier, because it proved to us that it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a big question. Yeah.
It really is, because I don't want to write this series off or Wheel of Time off or anything like that. But, I mean, Once Upon a Time had its effects. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was a television show, for pit's sakes. On network television, excuse me. I don't know. I guess it's different tone. I understand that. And, again, I'm not expecting the same level of effects in the show, as the original series. But the bar is set very high for how it portrayed it. So it's like, that's why
Yeah.
I was really hoping that this wasn't going to be an adaptation of the show and instead be its own set in the same universe, but look at a past Avatar instead. Don't want to just say like, oh, I wanted it, myself to be right. I'm just trying to go with, you know, what would probably work to the effects and the strengths of portraying a fantasy series where you shouldn't do a lot of like, you know, like effects heavy stuff.
And I am curious how much the general public, how much they're affected by this stuff. Cause yeah, I mean, when I was editing the first episode, I wanted to trim out some of the, how long I went on about how much I struggled to get into CGI integration with these kind of bigger scale effects laden programming and how much I find it off-putting. Cause I was like, I don't know if I come across as like whiny about that. Cause I think a lot of people just don't care, but I really do find, especially when it's just like things like matting. It's not even necessarily like CGI creatures. It's just when it's like a scene between two people doing dialogue, but it's just so clear that they're not in the location that they're in. It just takes me out so much. And I feel like that's maybe an unusual perspective. I feel like most people can just suspend their disbelief more than I can with that CGI stuff. I don't know. But it does bother me with this program. I try to give it as best as I can, but it does bother me.
So yeah, that's my whole spiel there. It's not to immediately give up on this series or anything like that. It's just the frustrations I'm having, and at least an obstacle that where I just say, because I mean, for Pitt's sakes, I'll just say it, like, you know, we've been watching a lot of OVAs as well. And you know, we recently reviewed Robot Carnival.
Oh,
I couldn't imagine. I'm just shaking my head. I could not imagine any of that in live action.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Heavy Metal, and I'm just like, again, shake my head. I couldn't imagine any of that. Like, just animation is just so good for fantasy.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand because it's just, yeah, something that's a lot way more applicable. Like they both work hand in hand just because it's animation. While it is to bring life to something from nothing, it can be exaggerated and you can accept that reality. So
yeah, and then this is probably another point that maybe is too much for this episode or for blaming this show in general. It's just a broader issue with effects laden modern programming, movies or TV, that I do think that it's something to do with also the fact that they shoot all these things digitally, that already creates this kind of too clean, or too, I don't know how to put it, kind of sheen to it that makes it have this artificial quality. And I think it makes it even more difficult for them to blend effects and people, where it creates this fakey quality. And yeah, again, maybe this is going into too much of that stuff. I'm sure a lot of people don't care about this, but
certainly not. But I don't want it to come across as being petty.
Yeah.
I really hope not. I hope I've laid my cards on the table in saying that this is not, this is not like a black and white issue. It's just, maybe it is, I don't know. I feel bad for, I just want to come out and say it. Like, yeah, I do have apprehensions about the show, but I guess to not repeat ourselves over and over again over the CGI integration, but whatever, again, Unholy Magic was used with Lord of the Rings. And to be fair, they weren't really using. I also wonder how one would approach this series if it were made in like the 70s or the 90s.
They would have had a very difficult time. A very difficult time.
The martial arts is possible, but the use of like the elements.
Yes.
That's a whole other story.
I don't know if they could have done something like this in that time without it looking just terrible.
It makes, but here's the thing though. I have either hope or, I mean, because it's also by a different studio, of course, but I have, this is why I'm looking forward to the Yu Yu Hakusho Netflix adaptation. One, because it's going to really do the opposite of this show, where it's going to cut down a lot of like filler from that first season of Yu Yu Hakusho, and it's going to really, like, I guess I'm excited to see that. I'm like, especially to see like what the CGI is going to be like, and if it is going to go a little bit more tokusatsu, as I said last time, where again, for some reason, those series of television programs, I'm convinced. Sure, I get I'm looking at, you know, it's not the most like refined or polished, but darn it, does it not make me like have a good time watching it and get me pumped up.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe we've gotten too far away from this episode. I guess we should probably start to wrap it up.
So the another embarrassing part, I'll say this, was when the Badger Mole caught up with Sokka and Katara. I could not help but think of the, I forgot their names already, and that's fine, but the creatures from episode 7, when they're when Rey and Finn are running away from them, and Finn gets caught, and you know, Rey has to save him. I could not help but think of that moment from when Sokka was getting attacked by the Badger Mole.
Oh, on like their ship with the big glob creatures, yep, or whatever they are, with all the, yep, little tentacles. Yeah. we've mentioned so much Star Wars in these few episodes of this. I think I even mentioned Yoda earlier on. Oh man.
Oh, and but the bit where when Uncle Iroh, conversely, when Uncle Iroh decides to not, you know, well, he wasn't going to, but when it looked like Uncle Iroh was going to burn that earthbender, or that, yeah, that Omashu guard who was belittling him and egging him on, being aggressive towards him. And then he, you know, he's like, you know, he shows, you know, signs of respect, and then the earthbender comes in and blasts him. I was like, ooh, that's a interesting callback to in episode 3 of the original series in book 1, where it's during the Agni Kai duel between Zhao and Zuko. So that's kind of that's a cool, like, I guess, twist, you want to say, or at least like, you know, call out, I suppose.
Yeah, a little reference, I guess.
There you go. Where it's, and this time's, yeah, where it's like, although it's different, where it's like, that's what happens when you show Earth that guard compassion or something like that.
but yeah, I think that about wraps it up for me, unless you have any other little bits.
The makeup effects for Bumi's face do look practical, I guess. I don't know. Do you think there was any de-aging, yep, in there as well?
No.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Biff Tannen in part 2.
Oh God.
And yep, also
Guy Pierce.
Or yeah, you know exactly what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Prometheus. Yeah.
Yeah, other than that, that's it's kind of a mixed episode.
Yeah.
Oh wait, there he is. I was sorry, I'm at the very end. Yeah, the Mechanus is right there at the end, but not really saying much.
Yeah.
Oops. Sorry, I made it to the end. I forgot about this.
Yeah, I agree with you. Mixed episode, there's some bits, especially with Zuko and Iroh, some really standout stuff there, and stuff that makes me want to see more of them and makes them stand out more, as I was already liking the two of them and Sokka the best. Now the two of them are standing above, and yeah, they might end up being the highlight of this series as we go through it.
Yeah, more so than Aang. It's a little bit meandery for him, but hey,
yeah,
don't worry, I'm not. I told you it would fail. No, not going there.
Oh no,
not going there. Even if I did make it clear that I'd rather not do this, it's like, no, fair enough. I'll see it through. I will see it through.
There we go. And I guess we're halfway
through. I think this time I think I actually brought stuff to the table today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Some good stuff in here.
Not to toot my own horn.
Just overall, not quite right. Or not quite perfect for us, but there's some good stuff. Definitely. But carry us out, Isaac. Carry us home.
I suppose that in the Cave of Two Lovers, that was the reason why those nomads were down there. Think on that for a second. Until next time, peace.
I thought you were going to say, let's play one final game and peace. But
I'm not sure. What is this? Jigsaw? Or the Saw movie, sorry.
Just because Boomy kept repeating it over again. One final game, Avatar. One final game.
Makes me wonder if he... Now, that's another interesting bit where they put the Cave of Two Lovers inside Omashu when literally it was supposed to be the secret passageway to Omashu. Not inside the city, but again, they condensed it all down. Makes me wonder what Ba Sing Se is going to look like.
Yeah, I'm curious.